Live from KCUR News, this is Casey Currents on Central Standard, reporting news and culture in Kansas City's diverse communities and beyond. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Maryville is under national scrutiny this week after the story went viral of a teen rape case that was dropped by a local prosecutor. We get an update from our reporter who covered the case on Casey Currents back in August.
I was just like, I thought I was dead at first. I was really confused. I couldn't even make sense of anything.
Plus, we discuss how to raise bilingual kids in Kansas City.
Naturally, it's easier just to speak English at home. So this way, you don't have to repeat yourself.
Whether parents are trying to pass on their own language or want to give their kids some added skills, how do you teach your child a second or third language? And we meet a guy who's considered the Swiss Army knife of local musicians. It's Casey Currents. Listen up just after this news. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Welcome to Casey Currents. We use stories and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region. And now we're live, so you can call in and share your thoughts on some of the big issues in our community. More and more research is coming out, telling us that being bilingual is good for your brain. It makes you more competitive in a global marketplace. And for many of us, language is our strongest link to our cultural heritage. But even if you're bilingual, when you live in an English-speaking community, it's not always easy to pass that language on to your child. We're going to talk about the advantages and challenges of raising bilingual kids on Casey Currents today. We're taking your calls at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. But first, Casey Currents' Beth Lipoff visits some local Chinese-American families who are looking for some help in teaching their kids Chinese.
Charlie Sun came to the United States from Taiwan at age 8.
When I came over, when I was in second or third grade, I noticed my Chinese abilities stopped at third grade. So I don't know if it's psychology or just, you know, when you're younger, you absorb it better.
Charlie's married now and has 3 daughters. At home, the family speaks English. Charlie's wife is not Chinese, but the couple decided before they had kids that they wanted their family to embrace Charlie's heritage.
I want them to have the same language, be able to speak and write a little bit, and have the culture, and make some friends.
That's why all his kids go to the Chinese School of Greater Kansas City.
So here in Kansas City, it's not a lot of places where you can go to have a gather of 200 Chinese people around. So this is, you know, we come here every Sunday for that.
About a dozen kindergartners sit in a sunny classroom learning the sounds of Chinese. Like more than 400 other students in the Kansas City area, they come to a Chinese school every Sunday. Most of their families have roots in China or Taiwan. Yang Wen is the principal of the school. He came here 25 years ago from Taiwan.
Our mission is trying to raise kids' interest in Chinese language and culture. So we expect when they bring their children come over here, we like to have them to know more about our culture variety. So we provide them different kind of approaches.
And the school isn't exclusively about language. Kids can learn Chinese yo-yo and karate, celebrate the Moon Festival and the Chinese New Year, and even take Chinese art classes. Yang Wen thinks being bilingual offers kids an advantage in an increasingly globalized society.
The most important thing is, like I said, this world has become smaller, and now there are a lot of business opportunity or visiting opportunity to Asia, especially in China, and they speak Chinese and Mandarin, so this will help them to understand, to know the country better.
At Charlie Sun's house, Chinese is important, but has a specific place in their family life. When his 10-year-old daughter Sienna is working on Chinese homework, she knows her dad's serious about it.
Like, my dad sometimes comes home and, like, talks to us in English, but then when my dad comes into the subject of doing Chinese, he talks to us in Chinese when we're doing Chinese homework and everything like that and Chinese stuff.
Naturally, it's easier just to speak English at home. So this way, you don't have to repeat yourself. But, you know, it's a challenge to have to explain why Chinese is important to the kids. You know, over a billion people in China speak Chinese. So by demand, there's a lot of people in the world that speaks Chinese.
He'd like to bring his kids back to Taiwan someday for a vacation. Sienna says she's getting better at Chinese, but talking to people in Taiwan would be challenging.
I would probably know half of what they're saying because I know, like, really easy words and some maybe, like, complicated words. But some of them, like, I speak really slowly trying to think of what words are, like, mean and stuff. And so, like people who actually know, like, are from Taiwan and stuff, they know how to speak, like, really fast. So it's kind of hard for me to understand sometimes, too.
Non-Chinese families who have adopted Chinese children come to Chinese schools, too, like Joni Porter and her three daughters. When Porter adopted each of the girls, she promised they would learn about their cultural roots.
I think whether they're Chinese parents or, you know, American parents with Chinese kids, we're all there for the same reason.
13-year-old Sarah says it can be tough to work on Chinese homework without parents who speak Chinese.
I think it's kind of hard for us to, like, know if we're saying it right, because if we're, like, we don't have anyone to correct us, so we could be saying the wrong thing, like, and then we wouldn't even know it until a week later. And by that time, we would have already, like, memorized it.
But they also have fun with it. Sarah enjoys teaching her best friend how to say things in Chinese.
First, I taught her how to count from 1 to 10 in Chinese. And then I taught her how to say, "You have a rat up your nose" in Chinese. So we've always been, like, saying that together.
Even when both parents speak Chinese, teaching it to the kids can be a challenge. Jessica Yin and her husband are both Chinese, so at home, they only speak Chinese with their kids. Even then, she found that teaching her older kids the language herself was difficult to do.
So I try to teach them Chinese at home, but it seems like it's not as easy as here, because they have the structure already set up so they can follow.
Her 8-year-old daughter, Ingrid Lee, learned simplified Chinese at the Kansas City Chinese Language School in Olathe. That's the written language used in mainland China.
你好,我的名字是李小雪.
Ingrid speaks Chinese and says she's pretty good at it, but it's still difficult sometimes.
I have to think in English, but it's kind of hard, even though I know how to say it. It's just hard for me to get the words out.
Michelle Liu is a 6th grade teacher at the Kansas City Chinese Language School. She says fluency will come with practice. Her main goal with students is to get them to a point where they can function in a Chinese language environment.
I want them basically increase their common sense about Chinese language. I mean, basically, if they can go back to China, they can read a sign on the road and read a sign on the shop and go anywhere, they can do some basic communication, which can be really helpful.
Liu isn't the only one with that practical outlook. For many of the families at Chinese schools, becoming bilingual is about more than preserving the past. It's preparing for the future. For Casey Currents, I'm Beth Lipoff.
The funny thing is, for many generations, immigrants to the United States wanted their kids to learn English, and English only. For them, total assimilation to American culture would bring success. But being bilingual is usually seen as an asset these days. Recent Story in Time magazine highlighted the latest research that shows that the multilingual brain is nimbler, quicker, better able to deal with ambiguities, resolve conflicts, and even resist dementia. Well, joining us now in the studio to talk about raising bilingual children is Marta Medina, an educator and parent. Welcome to Casey Currents.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
And also from NPR studio in Washington, D.C., Nancy Rhodes, a language consultant at the Center for Applied Linguistics. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And you can call in, join the conversation. If you're trying to raise your kids bilingual or have thought about it, call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at kcurrents@kcur.org. Nancy Rhodes, how did you get into this area of study?
Well, I actually grew up in Africa and South America, so at a very young age was just very interested in languages and different cultures. And then I went on and studied sociolinguistics and became very interested in young children learning languages and different ways in the United States that we can help children learn languages, whether in a school setting, whether at home with their parents, and just looking at the goal of not just learning a language for now, but as Beth said, preparing for the future.
And what did you speak multiple languages as a child growing up, sort of all around the world, it seems?
I spoke some Arabic, and then I learned Portuguese, and then in high school when I came back to the States, I learned Spanish.
And do you speak those languages now?
I speak my Spanish has taken over my Portuguese, and I can understand a little bit of Arabic, but yes, I'm definitely fluent in Spanish.
Well, Portuguese is my language, so we won't break into that
great.
Right now. But do you think perceptions of being bilingual and learning languages have changed in this country? I mentioned that in previous generations, there was the idea that learning English was the way to make it here.
Well, definitely things have changed. I mean, up until the 1960s, there was some research that was conducted erroneously, and it appeared that bilinguals had cognitive problems, and there were some issues with some of the research. But starting in the 1960s, the research shows that there are many advantages to bilingualism. And not only does it open up a child's mind to other people and other cultures, but also bilinguals are better at problem solving. They show more creativity. And anecdotally, according to teachers we talk to, they say that children who are studying foreign languages or are bilingual are better listeners just in general than monolinguals.
Interesting. Well, Marta Medina is here. And did you grow up bilingual?
I didn't, but I had the opportunity to learn English. I had the opportunity to come to the United States to learn, and because of that experience, I thought about teaching my kids two languages, and they went to a bilingual school when they were 2 years old.
Huh. Where did you grow up, Marta?
I grew up in Mexico. I am from Mexico.
And when did you move to the Kansas City area?
About 8 years ago.
And your kids, were they born here or were they born in Mexico?
They were born in Mexico. So at that time, Spanish was the primary spoken language.
Mm-hmm. For them?
For them.
And how old were they when they came here?
They were in second grade, 8 years old for my daughters, and my son was in middle school, 13.
Had they studied any English? Did they know any?
Yes, they went to a private bilingual school, and I think that it was very helpful for them. So when they came and they took the ELL assessment, they didn't have to receive ELL services. They went directly to a mainstream school. Class, so it was easy for them to learn everything.
So from a very young age, when you were in Mexico, you wanted your children to speak English.
Yes, yes.
Why is that?
Well, because of my experience. When I was when I had the opportunity to learn English, I had the opportunity to come here and visit and communicate and have friends and see some shows and a lot of good things for me as a teenager, so I want them to have the same opportunity. I never thought that we were going to come here and live here, and that opportunity that I gave them was going to be very, very helpful.
And did you worry when you came here that they would lose their Spanish?
No, I didn't. Spanish has been our primary spoken language at home, and I was not worried about it.
What do your kids primarily speak now?
Now it's English, but at home it's Spanish.
They still speak Spanish,
yes,
to you.
Yeah, but with my daughters, they are twins, and they talk to each other. They prefer English. But at home with us, it's Spanish all the time.
And we're Kansas City, we're interested in your questions and comments about growing up bilingual or raising your kids bilingual. A lot of people are interested in bilingual schools or language schools like the Chinese language school we just heard about. If you have a question, call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can also comment on our Facebook page, KCUR's page. Nancy Rhodes, I wonder the age that Marta's kids came to the United States and became immersed in English. I wonder what difference that makes in terms of bilingualism.
Well, it's always, you know, we say the younger the better, just because you can, if you start at a younger age and learning another language, you can build on your skills and really become fluent in the language. And ideally, if you do learn, start learning a language or become fluent in the language before around puberty, it's much easier to develop the pronunciation mm-hmm. and sound like a native speaker. You can do it after that age, but it's more difficult and mm-hmm. lot harder to work on that accent.
Well, we have a call here from Forrest in Blue Springs. Hi, Forrest. Welcome to KC Currents. Forrest, sounds like you're breaking up a little bit. I think you're breaking up a little bit. I'm sorry. I think Forrest had a question. He said that he is not Greek, but he speaks it, and he's trying to raise his kids to speak Greek, and his children are getting to a level that he can't help them get to the next step. So how does he help them? I wonder, Nancy, how common that is for people who are trying to teach their kids to speak another language that they themselves don't speak.
Well, there are many parents who feel so strongly that they want their children to become bilingual, so they are looking for ways that they can facilitate this. And one of the best ways is looking in the school district and seeing if there are language immersion programs. And I know the Kansas City, Missouri schools have some strong language immersion programs where children starting in kindergarten or first grade, receive at least half the school day taught in French or Spanish or in other areas. It's different languages. And that is one of the best ways we have in public schools in this country for children to become truly bilingual in the language.
I know in Kansas City, we have the Academy Lafayette, which is a charter school, French and mm-hmm. English, and the Foreign Language Academy, which is a Kansas City district school in Spanish and English. But Marta. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you're saying truly bilingual, that's true. Because, I mean, I like to talk to my daughters in different settings so they can learn how to communicate in different environments. And that is very, very important because they don't have to get used to just the academic vocabulary that probably they are going to learn in a school or too much social language. Yes, they can they are going to be able to interact with any people in a different environment, and they can understand expressions, they can understand the tradition. So it's I think that is a very, very important way. You as a parent, if your native language is different than English, to use it like in different environments with them.
Interesting. Well, you're listening to KC Currents on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Later this hour, we're going to talk about developments in a rape case in Maryville, Missouri, that's been getting some national scrutiny. But right now, we're talking about raising kids bilingual. I have a personal connection to this because I was raised bilingual in Portuguese and English. My mother's Brazilian. And I want to pass that on to my daughter. But in my case, my husband doesn't speak the language. And I have a lot of friends in that situation where maybe only one parent speaks a language and maybe isn't even 100% fluent. Nancy, do you hear about that? I mean, how do parents pass the language on in that situation?
Definitely. That's a common model where one parent speaks the language and the other doesn't. And it's, you know, one parent, one language. So, for example, you would speak Portuguese with your child and your husband would speak English with a child. And so the child would be raised bilingually in both languages and then would very quickly pick up on, you know, speaking Portuguese to mama and speaking English to papa. So that definitely is a model that works well, one language, one parent.
Hmm. But it feels challenging because you don't want to exclude your spouse from the your conversations with your child. And sometimes it feels like work to speak that language and you don't want to make it work to communicate with your child.
Yeah, and parents do say that it's a struggle, and especially as the kids get older. Once they get into school, you know, they're not going to be hearing Portuguese probably around much, and there's so much English, and even children who grow up in a totally monolingual, a second or third language in their home, environment. Once they get to English-speaking school, it's really hard for the parents to maintain it. So we always just say, continue at home as much as you can. You know, you don't want to, you know, force it, but yeah, as much as you can.
Marta Medina, do you have any advice as a parent?
Yeah, that is true. All of a sudden, you don't know when, but English becomes a primary spoken language for your kids mm-hmm. because they spend a lot of time with their friends in the school. So you as a parent need to keep working with speaking in your native language at home. And sometimes when they go to, we kind of like one day we switch, like they speak Spanish, we speak English. So, and they know the importance of keeping the language. One time we had the opportunity to go to do some shopping and I told them, okay, today I'm not speaking English, so you're going to be my interpreter. Mm-hmm. And they realize how important it is to communicate. They have had the opportunity to help other students, other people communicating, so they can realize how important it is to keep both languages. And one of them actually is learning a third language. Ali, she's learning French. So I am really excited about this.
We have a call, Julie from KCMO. Hi, Julie. Here we go. Julie from Kansas City. You're on the air. I'm sorry. Looks like we're having some trouble with our phone systems. Julie, I'm going to put you on hold. Julie was had three small kids and is interested in teaching them a second language and looking for resources, but she doesn't speak a second language. And Nancy, like I said, are we finding that that's also a common situation, that parents are really hearing about how the advantages of bilingualism and want their kids to have that?
Definitely. We're seeing this across the country, that parents are realizing that to prepare their children for future careers in this globalized society we live in now, we really need to have more opportunities for young children to learn languages. And I just heard that the Académie Lafayette, the French charter school in Kansas City, has a waiting list of 80 students to get into the kindergarten. And that, to me, just shows of the incredible interest among the parents for the opportunity to give their children a bilingual education. So I think we're seeing this a lot more now.
And I do know in Kansas City there's a program called the Language Project that works with very young kids, I think starting at 18 months, on several different languages. There's schools like the Chinese schools that we talked about at the beginning of the show, and I think for many other languages, if you have resources or have ideas of how you've helped raise your kids bilingual or expose them to different cultures or perhaps your own culture, give us a call, 816-235-2888. I'm actually not sure how our phone system is working right now, so let me say go to our Facebook page. It's the KCUR's Facebook page, or email us at kccurrents@kcur.org. Nancy, one thing that I think people get concerned about is sometimes kids can take longer to talk when they're exposed to more than one language at home. And when that starts to happen, people get worried. Is that something that you've heard about?
All the research shows that bilingual children learn to talk in a, you know, quote, normal amount of time. There's such a range of time where young children learn to talk, and bilingual children are in that range. So it actually, they actually don't have delayed language development, although that is sort of a common myth.
And we had a call, and unfortunately our phone system doesn't seem to be working. We have a lot of calls, so if you've called in, we may need you to call back. We may have to drop you. But Ron from Holden, Kansas, said that his son had learning disabilities, and I think that learning two languages may, I'm not positive, but have helped his son develop, do better. And I wonder if you know of any research on that.
Well, I have heard. I remember a principal here in Montgomery County, Maryland, was saying that one of the students in the French immersion school was having problems with in English and was involved in speech therapy. And once he got into French, he was able to do the French R's and was able had a perfect accent in French. So in that case, it was just ideal for that child. So yeah, they're. You know, each case is individual, and it would depend on what the language situation is with the child. But yes, there are cases definitely where it could certainly be beneficial.
And if you have comments or want to share your story, please go to our Facebook page, KCUR's Facebook page, or email kccurrents@kcur.org. Marta Medina, we had a question about connecting to resources, about learning language in Kansas City. And I think it's also about culture and connecting to culture. And I wonder what resources you know about that you use to connect your kids to the language or to Mexican's culture.
I think that the first thing is that you have to engage the students and your kids to know how important it is to speak another language. And I think that TV can be a good resource if they are young and if there's a lot of channels in Spanish, they can watch cartoons. I have some friends that they have a really good Spanish and they have been learning that just watching TV. Of course, some of our districts, they are also giving Spanish classes. That is wonderful. But the kids, they need to realize how important it is for them to speak two languages or more than two. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. So they don't feel like a pressure of learning something different or be afraid of it, just enjoying. And for us, it was very easy because we speak fluent the other language. So that was very easy for us. But with other families, they need to look for some resources.
And right now, there's this idea that it's a trend. It's good for kids to speak two languages. But I wonder, do you think there's also still sometimes a stigma attached to kids who perhaps at home speak one language and arrive at school not speaking English that well?
Well, for some of our families, they think that not learning, keep speaking the other language probably is going to affect their performance in the school, and probably they are not going to adjust to the society, but that is not true. With my kids, they are doing really great in the school. They are very successful. They are. We never had a problem with grades or communication or frustration because, of course, when we came, Spanish was the primary spoken language. So probably there are some stigmas, but in my experience, everything has been positive.
And you work with English language learners. Are there times, I just wonder if you have advice for parents who maybe are not that confident in English about maintaining their kids' Spanish?
Yes, they are always afraid that they are going speaking Spanish to them is going to have a big influence. It's going to affect in a negative way when they are learning, when they are in the school. But that is not true, because the biggest problem is that they can help in home with homework, and they can do it in their own language. They can read to them, they can speak to them, they can have the same activities in their own language, and they are going to help a lot. That's going to help a lot with the students.
Nancy Rhodes, I wonder if you have a perspective on this. We do hear about kids who struggle academically when they're called English as a second language or English language learners, yet we know there are so many benefits to bilingualism. Where do we make that connection, or mm-hmm. why do you hear about that being a struggle mm-hmm. too?
Well, just I agree totally with what Marta was saying, which is we definitely want families to maintain their native languages at home. It really helps the children when they get to school if they have a strong language base in their native language, and especially for parents who maybe have just arrived here and maybe aren't confident in their English language skills. We'd recommend they don't have to speak English with their children at home. You know, we encourage them to speak their native language with the children, let the children develop their native language skills. Then in school, they can add on English and learn English. So, yeah, definitely encourage the the native language at home. But once you get to school, what researchers have found out is that it does take a long time to learn any language, to learn language, even for children. So when these children come to this country, and maybe very soon you hear them speaking English on the playground, they may be speaking English with their friends, but the academic language that they need for math and science and really being able to write on academic topics and talk about academic topics, that takes much longer. And this was something that wasn't realized for a long time, and this is becoming much more apparent now, that these kids do need a longer time to develop those academic language skills. And the English ESL teachers are focusing much more on that type of academic language on those students.
And we have a note on Facebook from Kathy who says, we are raising our kids speaking French, English, and Franglais, which I guess is kind of like the French-English version of Spanglish. They are both taking French at school to learn how to read and write the language, which is completely different from verbal skills, which sounds kind of similar to what you're talking about.
Exactly, exactly.
Another thing that worries parents is when their kids do start mixing it up. And I mean, although it can be really funny, I know in my house, I sometimes thought a few Yiddish words that my parents sprinkled in were Portuguese, and we would mix it all up, and you know. But do kids sort it out eventually?
Yeah, they definitely do. And you know, a while back it was thought, oh, there's a problem; these children are mixing these languages. But now what we're realizing, it's actually a high level of competence that they are able to use two language systems. And it's not a negative thing. I mean, you definitely want them to be able to speak, you know, English and then also speak Spanish or whatever language separately. But yeah, it's a process that they go through when they're learning two languages at the same time.
And we have Esther here in Overland Park. Hi, Esther.
Hi. I just wanted to call. I'm really enjoying the program today. I was born in Havana, Cuba, and immigrated here with my parents and my brother in the early 60s. And Spanish really, truly, obviously was our first language. And as we got into the school system, I think one of the important things that they did is that, you know, like a couple of the other people mentioned earlier, we spoke only Spanish at home. And that is really hard to do. But it was a fast and steady rule at home, and we were also expected to get the best possible grades in English. But I think it's been a huge benefit. I've raised a son mostly as a single mother, and he is also fluent in Spanish and just sort of used the same method at home. I think the most difficult thing is that when you do get home, you're tired. You want to speak whatever's the easiest, and it will be English. Mm-hmm. So staying with the language that you're trying to teach is difficult. And, you know, oftentimes we get a little bit lazy, but you've got to stick with it. Mm-hmm.
You think it's worth it to make the effort?
Oh, absolutely. My son was in England doing a semester abroad and traveled to Spain, and you know, sent me, Skyped with and just said, oh my gosh, this has just been so fantastic. Mm. I mean, I'm just so happy that you pounded me with Spanish.
Martha, you're sort of reacting to Esther's comments.
Yes, I it's just a system that you have to have in your house. We are going to speak Spanish in my house. So, and it's good because they know at some point they know that they have to speak Spanish. And sometimes it is easier for them to say some expressions in English. And then you have to come, oh, you can say that like this, because you have to teach them how to use sayings and expressions in your own language. So, yeah, it is amazing.
Have you looked for books, Marta, in Spanish in the Kansas City? Are there places to get books, children's books and different resources for kids?
I have noticed that almost every single school in the libraries, they have books, and actually they have them like in one part of the book is in Spanish and the other one in English. And I think that it's very great. Yeah.
We have a call here from Nancy in Eudora. Welcome to Casey Currents, Nancy.
Thank you. Yes, I'm 74 years old, and I have never had any exposure to the Spanish language. And I'm learning estudia español. There's a wonderful Spanish class on Friday mornings at the Shepherd Center right off the UMKC campus.
Oh, yes,
you know,
on
the
Oak.
Shepherd Center?
Mm-hmm. It's on Oak Street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Right. For retired people. And I've also learned some Russian, so I'm trying, you know. At the age of 74, I put a CD in my car, and all the time I'm driving, I'm learning.
That's interesting, wonderful. Nancy. And Nancy Rhodes, do you hear about that? Is there some trend of older people also learning new languages?
Definitely. We hear a lot more. Older people are interested, and it just shows that you can learn a language at any age. We, of course, talk a lot about young children and the benefits of starting early, but you definitely can learn any language as an adult, and it's just a wonderful thing to do at any age.
Marta, is there a time that you just really feel proud of your kids that they've been able to speak two languages and operate kind of in two cultures?
Every day. I think for me, every day. When they have the opportunity to switch, yes, in 1 second to another language, when we go to a place and they help a person communicate with another person, when they are talking about their future careers and how they are going to use Spanish with their careers, it is a daily happiness.
Well, Marta Medina is an educator and parent in the Kansas City area. Thank you so much for joining
You're
us.
You're welcome.
And Nancy Rhodes is a language consultant for the Center for Applied Linguistics. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, how national attention to a rape case in Maryville has resulted in a call for a new look by a special prosecutor. This is KC Currents. This is KC Currents. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Now we go to a disturbing story that happened just north of here in Maryville. It's been almost 2 years now since Daisy Coleman, who was 14 years old then, was allegedly raped by 17-year-old football player Matthew Barnett. She was left propped up outside her home, unconscious from alcohol in the 30-degree weather. Barnett was arrested, but charges were dropped 2 months later by the Nottoway County prosecutor. Now, that prosecutor is now calling for a special prosecutor to look at the case again. You may have heard this story on KC Currents and KCUR this summer, but this week it went viral and, among many others, drew the attention of hacker collective Anonymous, which has kind of gone after Matthew Barnett and the residents of Maryville for ostracizing Daisy Coleman and her family. KC Currents' Monica Sandretsky, along with Peggy Lowe, reported this story this summer. Monica's in the studio now to tell us about the case and these new turns. Monica, how did you first hear about what was going on in Maryville?
Yeah, well, that was actually interesting. I actually have a friend who works with the National Organization for Women, and he told me through an email that the National Organization for Women had reached out to Melinda Coleman, the mother of Daisy Coleman, the victim, and asking her to become a member, and she said she was interested, but asked them for help and told them about the rape of her daughter by Matthew Barnett, and he passed that information along to me. But and so in the weeks following, Peggy, as you had mentioned, Peggy and I proceeded pretty carefully. I mean, doing our research and reading like local news reports from the time, and we also did get to finally sit down with the Colemans, and I mean, they talked to us for hours, and we were sitting around their kitchen table and with, you know, coffee mugs in hand. And we just thought it was so brave of them that they were willing to talk to us. And we also, in the succeeding weeks, talked with the lawmakers as well, the sheriff and the prosecuting attorney.
And although it had been a year or more after this had happened, I guess people were still talking about it and kind of wrapped up in knots about it in some ways in Maryville.
Yeah, that it definitely had been the talk of the town. But that was one thing that we just thought was so interesting, is that we had tried to talk to, I mean, when we were up in Maryville, probably six different people, I would say. And then when we did this story for KC Currents, I had talked with another half dozen people, and all of them were so hesitant to talk with me, really citing a whole idea of, like, you know, I still have to live here. And I mean, really hesitant to talk with the media.
And you got the sense that the town was divided?
Yeah, I would definitely so. And the Colemans would attest to that there was taking sides between, you know, Matthew Barnett with I mean, that he did have a prominence in the town, and from the sense that we had gotten that that Maryville is a big football town, and that there was sort of this, you know, rallying around the guys.
Now, just to take a step back, for people who don't know about what happened, what were you able to determine that actually happened that night? And I know it's a little complicated, but...
Sure. That from when we talked with the Colemans, and also from the police reports that we saw, that as a lot of what we've heard in news reports, that Daisy and her friend Paige, who has now come forward, were drinking in Daisy's bedroom and had also been texting with Matthew Barnett that evening. And he came over and picked up the girls. They snuck out of their house and in through a basement window into the Barnett family basement. And there was, I guess it was three other guys, three of Barnett's friends that were already there, including Jordan Zeck, who was ended up being charged with a crime for that evening. But there had been drinking going on, and Daisy and her friend continued drinking as well as along with the other guys that were there. And Paige had gone into another room with a minor boy who was there. And Daisy, in the course of the evening, was in another bedroom with Matthew Barnett. And that is where Jordan Zeck admitted to videotaping Barnett and Daisy kissing, half undressed. And of course, we haven't seen that video yet.
It disappeared. It seems to have disappeared.
Yeah, that's sort of been a contested point. Contested maybe isn't the right word, but that the guys all like passed it around from the police reports. The guys had passed it around and seen it that night, but apparently the police couldn't retrieve it from what they said.
And then, Daisy and Matthew had sex. There's no question about that, but there's a question about, how even conscious she was.
Right, exactly. That the other boys and also Paige, who was there, said that there's no question she seemed incoherent, wasn't able to walk, not really with it. Barnett admits to having consensual sex with her. He doesn't admit to rape, but he admits to having consensual sex with her, saying that he knew she had been drinking, but was just buzzed at the time.
And the prosecutor eventually dropped charges. Why does he say that he dropped charges?
Well, that was a huge question for us, and why we were really going forward with the case was he said that there was insufficient evidence to proceed with a criminal case. And that was it. I mean, that's all we knew.
And now more recently, he said that Melinda and Daisy refused to cooperate.
Right. And that's what the sheriff had told us, too. And like you said, Rice has said that the Colemans were unwilling to cooperate, that he told them that if they pled the fifth, did they understand that charges would be dropped and the case would be dismissed. But from what the Colemans had told us, they were scared, but they were also advised by their rape advocate to plead the Fifth Amendment. And the advocate had also said like these lawmen would come on strong against them. And so initially the Colemans did plead the Fifth Amendment, and that's when the felony charge was dropped. But after that, they did come forward and were willing to talk and did do a deposition, which Rice told us back in July that depositions were done for that misdemeanor of child endangerment when Matthew Barnett had driven the girls back home and left Daisy in the front yard in freezing weather for 3 hours in nothing but sweatshirts and a T-shirt.
Yet no charges. Those charges didn't continue either.
No, those were dropped.
Now, national attention has suddenly turned to this case. What are people around the country, how are they responding?
Right, exactly. There's been a lot of outcry on social media and then a calling for the attorney general to take a look at the case. He said it's not within his authority to do that. But the lieutenant governor has also called for a grand jury to reexamine the case. And just this morning, like you had mentioned in the intro, that Robert Rice has called for a special prosecutor to reexamine the case.
Does it look like that might happen? Do you know yet?
I'm not totally sure. That's up to the judge to decide.
And how often do you think cases like this are happening around the country?
Well, all the time, quite frankly, according to RAIN, that's the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. And there's a sexual assault happening about every 2 minutes. around the country.
So why do you think, and I know that maybe a guess, but why is this case getting people's attention? And
well, I guess I would say that I think it's partially because the charges were dropped against these guys and that no one really seems to know why. And that also, I mean, that it has just been recently that it's gotten more attention. But
and from what I understand, I mean, people don't always come forward, and certainly not publicly like this. What's happened to the Coleman family in all this time?
Right. The Coleman family, they had been living in Maryville, but they've since moved back to their home in Albany, where they that's really where the family grew up. But especially, I think, for Daisy, I think it's important to say that, I mean, she has, in the aftermath, had several suicide attempts, that she's tried to commit suicide several times. And, I mean, has, you know, there's been self-mutilation. She's been burning and cutting herself. And she told us that it got to the point where she didn't care if she got dumped in a front yard again, that if she was this ugly on the inside, she might as well look it on the outside. But she has been getting psychological help. And her mom's also said she's been really faithful about, you know, journaling about her feelings.
Well, we'll have to end it there, but this conversation is going to continue on Tuesday on Central Standard. Monica Sandretsky was an intern this past year at KCUR. She worked with KCUR's Peggy Lowe on a series that aired this summer about this rape case in Maryville. Monica's leaving Kansas City next week to become a reporter at public radio station WSKG in Binghamton, New York. We're really proud of you and so appreciative of your hard work on KC Currents, Monica. Good luck.
Thank you so much. I'll miss it here.
There's something that strings all these different local bands together. Mr. Marco's V7, The Grizzly Hand, Ernest James Zydeco, Dead Voices, musician Mike Stover plays in all of these bands, and more. Normally, when you hear a story about a band, you hear from the lead singer or songwriter, the person at the front of the stage. Mike Stover is normally in the back or off to the side, sometimes sitting down. He doesn't sing, he just sticks to the strings. KCUR's Suzanne Hogan has this profile.
On the night of the Crossroads Music Festival last September, musician Mike Stover was one especially busy guy.
Played that show at Crossroads with Grizzly, and then I packed everything up, drove across the street to a collection, played a couple songs with Eric Bakes, packed it all up. When I got to the Brick, we ran a little behind with Eric, so when I got to the Brick, Dead Voices had already started, so I just threw all my stuff up on stage and jumped in mid-song. And then the last gig of the night was Mr. Marcos V7.
Okay, that's a particularly busy example, but every week for Stover consists of at least a couple rehearsals and a gig or two, or sometimes three or more. On top of holding down his day job at the audiovisual desk at the Kansas City, Kansas Public Library, Stover stays very busy. The gigs pay some, but he doesn't make a living as a musician. In the basement of his home in his studio is a practice space for a lot of his bands. We're listening to a recording from even another band he's a member of, People's Liberation Big Band, a group of over a dozen members. He plays the guitar and steel guitar.
So weird hearing yourself play.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, not that note. Don't do that.
He says recordings from even a few years ago can be hard to listen back to, because he's a better player now. He's always improving. Originally from Joplin, Missouri, Mike Stover is a primarily self-taught musician. He first started playing the guitar when he was 11 years old and has expanded his range of instruments and ability. He plays banjo, pedal steel, lap steel, mandolin, bass. After spending some time in Texas, he moved to Kansas City in the late 90s.
I'm also a really shy musician, so I lived here for a while and didn't do a whole lot.
But that changed once he got to know more people.
I guess the word kind of got out that I had more instruments at my disposal, because, you know, there's a lot of great guitar players in town, but there's not too many guys who can play a steel guitar and who are interested in playing something that's not country, for example.
Stover's interest in a variety of genres and string instrument stock made him a desirable candidate, an easy addition for bands looking for added flair and different sounds. In In 2006, he joined Mr. Marco's V7. In this band, he plays the theremin, mandolin, and steel guitar. Over the past 7 years, Stover just got busier and busier. Ernest James Zydeco Band needed a bass player. He joined Dead Voices, playing the lap steel. Americana group Grizzly Hand on the banjo and steel guitar. He joined the James Isaac Group, a jazz ensemble.
I have a hard time saying no, which is, can, you know, is good and bad.
The good part being Stover gets to play a lot of different types of music, which he likes, but he still gets gentle heckling from bandmates.
Marco Pasqualini described me as, the Swiss Army knife of Kansas City, of the Kansas City music scene, because I had all this stuff at my disposal. And, you know, sometimes runs into booking problems where people want to play a show, and I'm like, I'm already booked. I try to keep it all fair.
Do you have a favorite of your bands?
absolutely cannot answer that. It's like asking. I'm just glad they're all there because it all balances out. You know, I couldn't do one without the other.
In his studio, Stover shows me the lap steel, a stringed instrument that lays on its back that's plucked while applying pressure using a steel bar on the fretboard. He plays this in Dead Voices and sometimes on Grizzly Hand.
So there's a lot of kind of like bendy...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's all about the glissandos.
What are those called?
Glissando. Just a moving up or down from one note to the next without like... That's the difference between a glissando and just a regular note.
Stover says he doesn't have a hard time remembering all the different song structures for all the different bands. The challenging part is remembering which instrument he's playing, how it's tuned, and the string variations.
You know, they all feel different on your hands, so there's a little bit of that muscle memory involved. But every once in a while, it fails you. And I'll be looking at a note thinking I'm on a B, but I'm actually on a C.
Mike Stover likes being off to the side or in the back. He doesn't want to be a front man or band leader. He likes working collaboratively with bandmates.
It takes a little bit of the pressure off, for sure, as opposed to being a band leader, where I can just... add my part, and if it's not there, it'll be missed, but it's not gonna bring everything crashing down.
But Stover's about to make a big step out of the background and into a more visible, vulnerable place. He's been asked to create the score for a new locally shot and directed film, Kick Me, which is in production and scheduled to come out next year.
That's the scary part. So when I'm down here by myself and it's like, okay, now I have to make music. I can't just be running to the next thing and playing what somebody told me to. It's like the creative part.
So you kind of thrive off of that busy body musician.
Yeah, it kind of it helps kind of chase those weird demons away. Just being on the go and being like, just play what, tell me what to play and I'll do it. So now it's time for me to actually be creative and show that side.
In the last 2 months, Mike Stover has played 22 shows. He plans to kind of chill out his gig schedule in the next couple months as he focuses his energy on writing for the film. He also says, understandably so, that he and his wife could sure use a vacation. For Casey Currents, I'm Suzanne Hogan.
Not surprisingly, Mike Stover has a lot of shows coming up. Three with Ernest James Zydeco. That's who we're hearing right now. The song is Whoa Sally. That's him on bass. And a couple with the Grizzly Hand and others. You can see a full list and some pictures of Mike Stover on our website at kcur.org. That's it for Casey Currents. Our live broadcast is every Thursday morning. If you missed part of the show, want to hear it again, or subscribe to the podcast, check out our page at kcur.org. Contact us at kccurrents@kcur.org or on Twitter at kccurrents. Central Standard returns tomorrow with the Food Critics. Next on Up to Date, they're talking the Chiefs with Kansas City sports columnist Sam Mellinger. Today's KC Currents was produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Suzanne Hogan, Alex Smith, and Susan Wilson. Our interns are Esther Honig, Ross Steinmetz, and Sydney Llewellyn. Theme music is by Approach. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, and this is KCUR.